It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell is with us here this morning from Harvell & Collins. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing fine. Last week, we started a top 10 list.
We did. Last week, Wes and I discussed, 10 of the very most common estate planning questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we got through five of them, and then today I hope we maybe can get through the last five. But very quickly, just to review the first five, your executor does not have to be a resident of North Carolina.
Okay, common question.
Number two, please make sure that your executor is the same person as your durable power of attorney. In other words, your agent under the power of attorney. The executor, of course, takes over from the duties of the power of attorney when there's a death, and it's best that it be the same person so that the right hand kind of knows what the left hand has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have lots of alternates. One executor is not sufficient. You need, what if this person is unable to serve? What if they're not living? Then the following person will serve, and then even a third alternate is important. And with the same concepts of alternates and contingencies is number four, which is that, let's make sure that we name what happens. We just assume that our children will still be living, or that a particular person will still be living, or a particular charity will still be named the same charity. Let's make sure that even with beneficiaries, there are contingencies. Number five, then, is that in North Carolina, you are and you can legally disinherit your child and or children. There's no right to inheritance by a child in the state of North Carolina, but Katie bar the door, there is absolutely a right to inheritance in the state of North Carolina relative to a spouse.
Okay.
In certain conditions,
right,
of course.
Right.
Now, number six, Ben, we need to make sure that our beneficiaries on our accounts are consistent with our will, or either the beneficiary on the account is our estate, so that the assets of that account come into our estate and then are distributed according to our will. Now, this is critically important. What I mean here is, if we have a will and we leave everything to our three children, but then we have a bank account that has, $50,000 in it that's joint with a child, and they take that to the exclusion of the other two children,
right,
this is a problem.
Yeah.
Or an IRA beneficiary, an annuity beneficiary, a life insurance beneficiary, a payable on death or time on death on our various stock accounts. These kinds of account designations now, Ben, are just so very common.
Mm-hmm.
They are almost second nature, that institutions, for whatever reason, don't seem to be even able to open up an account in your individual name without then making the account payable on death or time on death or joint with right of survivorship.
But you know how this works. I mean, it says somebody who's getting on in years, they say, well, to their daughter, well, let me just put you on my checking account so you can take care of things.
But they don't need to do that because they have a power of attorney that gives their daughter or son total and complete access to the account for purpose of paying their bills.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to make their son or daughter an owner on the account. They don't need to make their son or daughter a joint tenant on the account, or payable on death. Any of those kinds of things can be inconsistent with the terms of the will. Now, again, it's not that you can't do it. You can do it, but let's make sure it's consistent with the terms of the will.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's an important
detail. And as you mentioned, making the beneficiary or the estate may be one of the easier functions.
It really is very, very straightforward to simply make the estate the beneficiary of an asset, and then the asset again passes according to the will.
Okay.
So let's look carefully at the terms of your will. More and more people are leaving things to grandchildren or mm-hmm. a class of persons known as their grandchildren, as well, you know, say they have three children, they leave things four ways,
mm-hmm.
a third to each of the children, and then that, well, excuse me, a fourth mm-hmm. to each of the children, and then that last fourth to a class of persons known as grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wonderful thing to do as long as your estate beneficiaries are not all to just one of those children.
All right. That's next on our list.
Number seven. Codicil. When do you do it? We get mm-hmm. lots of questions, you know, about can't you just do this, you know, Cecil, with a simple codicil to my will? And the answer is it depends on what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start this discussion as to codicils, Ben, with the concept that both the codicil and the prior will that it is amending or modifying both now go on public record at the time of a death.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are materially changing beneficiaries, if we are, you know, changing the disposition of our estate in some significant way, then it's probably best that we simply, you know, rewrite the will.
Right.
Have a new will that is consistent with what our intention now happens to be. If we're just changing the appointment of a fiduciary, an executor, because unfortunately someone in our family has died, we need to change the fiduciary. This, of course, is a very minor change, and that would be something where we could consider using a codicil.
Right.
But we have to be very careful with codicils.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. You actually have a blog post about a court of appeals declaring a handwritten codicil invalid. So
correct.
It's something to pay attention to.
Correct. A codicil has to have what in the law is known as equal dignity to the document in which it's modifying or changing. And so if you're going to have a typewritten, attested written will that is witnessed by two witnesses and signed under notary, then we need to make sure that the codicil has two witnesses
mm-hmm.
and that it is signed under notary. Again, these rules are sometimes not hard, fast rules, but this is, we're trying to put our client in a position where there is limited delay.
Mm-hmm.
We're mitigating delay. We're mitigating extra cost. We don't want two or three different lawyers
right.
all involved in the case so that the cost of the file
mm-hmm.
it becomes so very significant. We all want our estate to go smoothly
mm-hmm.
and to go, and to be, you know, to be efficient. And so when we do a codicil, even though it's coming out of a place of simplicity in the mind of the client, it could strike the match
mm-hmm.
and create a real conflict in the file.
Okay, that's two down. Let's see if we can get the other
number
three.
Number eight. Lots of questions about. We go through the will, we go through the terminology, who will be the executor, how the assets will be divided, and then many times people say, well, now, you know, this really probably isn't all that important, Mr. Harvell, but, you know, I do want my jewelry to go to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I do want my decoys to go to my son,
mm-hmm.
says the male client. I do want a certain piece of furniture
mm-hmm.
to go to a particular granddaughter. She's always had her eye on that brake front, and I want
right.
her to have that. So these are tangible, touch and feel, tangible personal property. And tangible personal property is best handled by the will referencing that I may leave a memorandum
mm-hmm.
concerning my tangible personal property. And I request that my executor distribute my tangible personal items consistent with this memorandum. And this is the most prudent way to handle tangible things. We do not need to encumber the will with, you know, furniture, jewelry, mm-hmm. china, things of this nature, unless for some reason there's some, you know, really most important piece. Extremely valuable piece
mm-hmm.
of art. I mean, I've had a client here recently that had a Van Gogh painting, for heaven's sakes, here
mm-hmm.
in eastern North Carolina. And so something like that's going to have to be handled a little bit differently.
Right, right. But also, you wouldn't put real property in a...
Memo. Oh, no. You can't put real property or, thank you, Ben, or stocks, bonds, bank accounts. This is having to do with touch and feel something tangible property.
The Hummel collection.
The Hummel collection. Right. The china. The sterling silver. Mm-hmm. The jewelry. Grandmother's pearls. All of these kinds of tangible, upliftable, touch and feel things.
Now, does that memo get filed with the will?
The memo gets put with the will. We suggest that you write it out in your own handwriting so that folks recognize your handwriting and put it with the will. Now, you don't have to do this memorandum. I mean, if you don't desire, I mean, if you just want things divided between the couple of children or three children, and you know that they will handle all of this beautifully, which is probably the majority of files that we handle,
right,
then you just simply say, I leave my tangible personal property to my children to be divided as equal as possible between the three children. And they then will come forward, and probably the girls will take the girl things and the guys will take the guy things, and all will be fine.
Now, but what I'm asking is, the memorandum filed in the courthouse with the will?
No.
But it's kept with the will.
It's kept with the will. So wherever the will would happen to be, then the memorandum would be with it. If we cannot file a will with the courthouse. That is called, you cannot file a will until there's been a death.
Right.
Okay? And a certificate of death, I might add. You can place your will at the courthouse for safekeeping. And this is something that some clients have done. We don't necessarily do that at our office because we want the will to be very convenient to the client and to the family. We want them to come by and seek guidance if for some reason they want to make a change or a modification, things of that nature. But wherever the will happens to be, let's also put this memorandum if we elect to have a memorandum.
Okay. All right. More to come in a moment here. We got a couple more to take a look at here in our top 10 list of common estate questions. You can call us as well if you like at 800-818-2255. Maybe you have one we haven't thought of. 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And more on Let's Talk Legal in just a moment. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins and talking about our top 10 basic questions for estate planning.
And Ben, back to, you know, with each and every one of these things, I hope our listeners are understanding that these are the top 10 questions. In other words, the question many times arises very, very often. Well, what do I do about my sterling silver? What do I do about my engagement ring or grandmother's set of pearls or whatever the case might be? It's the client that asks this question. And then we, of course, as the lawyer, are responding to the question by saying, well, probably that is best handled through a written memorandum that is then put with the will. That's just a very common question.
Okay.
And, of course, as I just mentioned, I see we have a little bit of time. We've got two more. You know, the codicil, again, it's the client that brings this up.
Right.
They come in, and they even when they call and make their appointment, you know, it will be indexed, you know, subject matter. Codicil to their will.
Yes, right.
So the client brings up these questions, and then there we are as the lawyer explaining what we think is best, what the best solution might be considering all the circumstances.
And I know that you can, because you've said this many times, is that even though a lot of these are common questions and a lot of things do come up on a regular basis, every person in every instance is their own case.
And there's just no question about that.
Yeah.
And the duty of, you know, of a lawyer is to listen very, very carefully to the client and to what their intention is to be, and then mold the intention to the correct kind of terminology and provisions in their document, but to also guide the client. And to tell them if there are, which there many times are, disadvantages and why to certain intentions that the client might have. We should not be, as a lawyer, in my opinion, you know, just a rubber stamp. Now, if after full consultation and advice with the client says, well, I understand, I appreciate so very much what you've said. I understand the disadvantage to doing it that way, but I would like to do it that way anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a horse of a different color, and we will proceed to do it that way. That is a bit rare, however.
Right.
Most folks with, after having the comprehensive guidance, will conform their intention in some way so as to, you know, for us to have kind of what we might call a win-win all the way around.
Okay. All right. All right. Number nine.
Specific bequest. Why not? I mean, so many clients, again, most common questions. Well, you mean you're not going to specifically say that my 2015 Chevrolet goes here, or my Wells Fargo bank account goes there, or my stock account at Merrill Lynch goes over here, my home located on Country Club Road?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no. These things are always changing, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Our assets, the names of our banking institutions. Will we still own that particular home on Country Club Road, or will it be a different piece of real property? Will it still be that car, or will mm-hmm. it be a different automobile? So the best format for a well-drafted last will and testament is that I hereby bequeath the rest, residue, and remainder of my estate, both real and personal, personal being assets in bank accounts, stocks, bonds, as well as real property, as follows.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, set forth percentages or shares, mm-hmm. if you will, between the beneficiaries. We do not need to usually mention the specifics mm-hmm. of someone's financial statement.
Right.
And this, of course, again, is a very common question, a very common discussion that we have with the client. Now, there always, again, as you just said, Ben, are exceptions mm-hmm. to this rule. And clearly, there are certain times that, well, this particular family farm, my son has been farming that now.
Mm-hmm.
He is to take that over. The house will go to the children, et cetera, to the other two children, but the farm will go to the son who's been farming it.
Right.
Or this particular asset goes to a particular child. But that again is the exception to the rule, not mm-hmm. the general rule.
Now if some real property is encumbered already, it has a mortgage or has debt, does that change how you may mention it in the will?
Say that again, Ben.
If you have a mortgage on a property, you've there's a lien against against a piece of property. Is that handled a different way in the will or anything?
Well, a will should address property that has a mortgage. If it is other than the fact that the property goes with the mortgage goes with the property.
Right, okay.
The mortgage goes with the property.
Mm-hmm.
You have given the property in your will subject to a mortgage, and so whoever the beneficiary happens to be is going to have to take control of that mortgage mm-hmm. and would be obligated for that mortgage.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you as the writer of the will want the mortgage paid in a different way other mm-hmm. than by the person who inherits the property, then that can be done, but that then has to be very specifically drafted in the document.
Like an asset, another account or some
yes.
applied to
mm-hmm.
that mortgage. Okay,
mm-hmm.
okay,
yeah.
gotcha.
I hereby direct mm-hmm. that my mortgage on such and such property be paid first mm-hmm. out of the assets of my estate, and after the mortgages have been paid, I then direct this property, this land, to a particular child.
Okay.
Yes, that can be done.
All right. We'll get one more question coming up in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. As always, you can go online at harvellandcollins.com. There's a lot of great information that's free for you right there. You can go listen to the blog posts and check those out, and also give them a call at 726-9050 to set up your appointment. More to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and Cecil Harvell with us today. One more top
yes.
question.
So, you know, just very common question about, you know, the specific mentioning of specific assets in a will. Clients are just so many times surprised that it is as generic as it happens to be in terms of this rest, residue, and remainder of whatever personal and or real property I happen to have, and not specifically mentioning the address of the property or the particular bank account or the particular automobile or anything of that nature. This is a common question that mm-hmm. we have been. Mm-hmm. Last, well, folks call, as one would expect, Ben, and they always, again, in the subject matter of the appointment, you know, I'd like to meet with the lawyer to have a will drafted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, of course, you know, there are so many other documents that we need that are critically important other than just a will. A will does not speak until there has been a death.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about someone having the authority to handle our affairs mm-hmm. while we're still living,
mm-hmm.
to pay our bills, sign our tax returns, deal with our real property, pay the taxes on the property, just like we were just talking about,
mm-hmm.
handle, you know, the repairs, the maintenance, the insurance, all of the life and living day-to-day affairs have to be handled, even though we are sick or ill or we're elderly and we cannot continue to do these things. We are still living. The will has no validity at this point
mm-hmm.
whatsoever, but the durable power of attorney does.
Hmm.
And a well-drafted durable power of attorney is an absolute critical companion, if you will. The very first cousin of the well-drafted last will and testament would be the durable power of attorney. And in the state of North Carolina, the legislature has bifurcated the statute as to powers of attorney between those that are financial in nature and then those that are health care related.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a separate and distinct power of attorney for health care issues. And if we think about this for a minute, we do realize that the hospital and our doctors, they really do not have any concern about our financial affairs.
Right.
They have concern about our medical mm-hmm. decisions. And if we cannot make them, then we hereby appoint this person to sign for surgery, authorize anesthesia, authorize a diagnostic procedure. Again, only if we're unable to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are unable to make those decisions due to an accident or illness or elder age, then we need to have an agent. So there is a medical power of attorney
mm-hmm.
in the state of North Carolina, and then there is a financial or a durable power of attorney.
Now, you talk about the durable power of attorney and the executor should be the same. But not necessarily true with the health care power of attorney.
Not necessarily true with the health care power of attorney. Thank you, Ben. That's exactly true.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, again, there are exceptions to these rules, but mm-hmm. generally speaking, the financial power of attorney will know what has occurred,
mm-hmm.
what bills have been paid, what tax returns have been filed, and therefore it would be good for them to be the executor.
726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City for Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law.